Health Human Services and Housing meeting for June 8th, 2022 to order. I'll take a motion to approve the May 4th regular meeting minutes.
I'll move.
Second.
I missed that completely. Who moved it? Legislator Uchitel? Is that right? And second by Corcoran? Let's go with that.
That sounds great.
All right, I'm on my 10th hour meeting right now, just for the record. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
All right, any opposed? Aye. All right, perfect. So we're going to simultaneously do the presentation and move to resolutions, because what we'll do is we'll get the presentation from Commissioner McDonald on mental health in the school, and then move right to those two resolutions. So we could just hear her presentation, then we can make a motion to discuss the resolutions, and then you can ask the questions. Does that make sense? After we've made the motion to discuss the resolution? Great. So go ahead, Commissioner McDonald.
Sure, thank you. So I'm sorry, Jay. So you gave me the heads up to share my screen. Okay. All right. So I will share my screen. Okay, great. And just while I set it to, hopefully I'm setting it correctly, sorry. Oh, we're going to have to wing it through. This will be a joint venture with myself and our Children's SPOA coordinator, Thomasine Oliphant, who can speak a little bit better to what it is that we're seeing locally that was a part of necessitating the need to be able to create the program in the first place. So I thank you all for allowing for us to speak to the Mental Health in Schools program. I am going to try and set this. I'm sorry.
Tara, you want to go to the slideshow and then?
Yep. Thank you, Katrina. All right. So the first slide is really just talking about some of the recent events that also speaks to how important it is for mental health to support our youth in schools now more than ever. And you'll see that between the distress of being a teenager, and adolescence is a very difficult and tumultuous time, even for the best of circumstances. So our teens are really feeling it when you put it against the backdrop of this developmental period that they're in. In addition to gun violence and the prolonged period of the pandemic, our youth are really having a hard time, and they're struggling. And they're struggling, and they're showing up in emergency rooms and not necessarily getting the services that they need. And they're going to their school counselors and their teachers and their parents, and they definitely, it certainly takes a village to be able to raise kids in the best of circumstances, but we definitely all need, we need all hands on deck now. Those are sort of the national landscape, but I wanted Thomasine to talk about locally what are some of the impacts that we're seeing that will also necessitate the need for us to push some services into our schools. Thomasine, can you talk to this slide?
Thank you, Tara. So I just wanted to share especially that we're seeing an increased number of SPOA applications for children, not only our traditional youth that usually come through our system, but just youth across the board from all socioeconomic backgrounds, especially in, you know, all different type of circumstances. One of the most increased situations is that the youth are struggling with anxiety with going to school. This is like getting, you know, from their house to school. And so though there are many services, you know, the supports in school, we are struggling with making that connection for youth with services, you know, to work with them in the home to get them to school, because there's not many services that we have in the community now. So I'm getting referrals across most of all school districts in the county. And so we're seeing this really high need of school staff informing us that our youth are struggling with anxiety of going to school and you know, just this depression that they're also experiencing with also from coming from the pandemic and, you know, going from remote and back into school and the different social anxieties that they also have been experiencing. So that also goes into the school's transition piece. Definitely that middle age group and junior high are the highest need right now. And with those transitions from each school, like elementary to middle school and then middle school to junior high and then junior high to high school, that is what we're seeing is an increase with that support that is needed. So these services that we're discussing are really crucial because it would provide more support in the home opposed to just in the school. And I'll let Tara continue.
Thank you, Thomasine. Really briefly, the planning and design process that brought us to the development of this program. In the spring of 2021, we initiated the process. We consulted with stakeholders, Dr. Corey, the BOCES superintendent, pupil personnel staff from each of the districts, and we had individual meetings between the department and the school districts. The meetings were really to discuss specifically for their districts, what are some of the needs that they think they would have? And at the time, because the kids were working or going to school remotely, they were preparing for them to come back into the schools physically for September of 21. So what we were hearing most times was that they weren't sure what they were expecting, but they knew that the kids were going to need some more supports. The more in-depth meetings yielded the need for support, as I said, and the support should also have the ability to occur off school grounds and extended into the youth community. This speaks to what Thomasine was saying. The schools have put in some resources within the school buildings, with the campus, additional social workers and even psychologists for testing, but the need continues to have supports that bridge between the home and in the school. School avoidance is very normal and sometimes, and certain levels of school avoidance can be normal, especially when you put it against, again, that developmental backdrop. But when it becomes exacerbated by the anxiety and the depression and it goes on for long periods of time, then kids start to lose big pieces of their educational milestones that's all connected to the school avoidance. So the hope is that this service would be able to help them to get them into the school building where they will have the additional supports that the districts have developed for themselves. The RFP was developed and based on the feedback we received, from the school districts. Goals of the service: buttress existing services available both in the school and the community, provide intensive time-limited clinical intervention and care coordination to Ulster County students. Again, it will be a part of the school community in each of our 9 districts. We did get buy-in from 100% of our districts, which is so wonderful. Services will be targeted towards middle-aged young people. And we aim to promote overall wellness at school and at home, to build protective factors to offset effects of trauma and directly target social determinants of health. It wasn't necessarily built to be a clinical service. And yes, there is a clinician that is a part of the team, but that is so that they come with the skills to be able to assess and to identify when there are deeper issues. But really, we're just looking at a family and a youth, and we're saying, what do you need? Where do you need support? And it doesn't always need to be in another therapy session. The staffing is one licensed master or clinical social worker per team. They could also be a licensed mental health counselor, and one care manager to provide the supports. And the supports would be provided through weekly face-to-face sessions with the youth, family support sessions with the youth and the caregiver or parent, ongoing communication meetings with school staff as needed, linkage to community supports and resources, and coordination with other providers. That coordination is truly key. Kids are generally not a family of one. They have a community around them. They have a school. They have parents. Maybe they have a job. They have siblings. And it takes a lot of coordination to make sure that these are all working together to be able to support someone. Some of the activities that were included in the RFP as goals, the youth would have goals around their behavior in school or in the community. They'd have goals around stabilizing mental health or trauma, responses, substance use, the social, including extracurricular activities, physical and wellness, access to healthcare, housing instability, food insecurity, violence at home, all of those things that necessarily won't come out in the, during the school day, but impact their ability to be able to be educated and function within the school day. So why now? We're wanting to be responsive to the current need for greater mental health supports for youth. It meets the offer criteria, and that is one of the primary categories of eligible use for SLFRF funds, as it's a public health crisis and supports the households and communities that are impacted by COVID. There's a wide community impact developed with wide outreach to all school districts, serves the entire county, and strengthens vital public services. Approval is time sensitive in order to allow for sufficient time to plan for a fall lunch. That's the end. And I certainly would love to open it up to any questions, feedback that anyone may have.
But before you do, I'll take a motion to discuss. So the first resolution, and we'll take these separately, even though the discussion will probably happen more for the first one and we won't need to repeat it. So resolution 290, amending the county budget to include federal aid funding to implement the mental health in school program, Department of Mental Health, a motion to discuss.
I move that.
Okay, so you should tell Second Corcoran. I will say that the ARPA committee has not made a decision. They have done their calculations on this, but they have not voted on it in their committee yet. We do traditionally not vote on something until they have had a chance to. I'm not suggesting one way or another. I'm just saying that has been our approach, and I just wanted you to know that they have not actually voted on this yet. Okay, so I'll open the floor to questions, discussions, comments, anything. Legislator Lopez, is that a hand up? Oh, sorry, Legislator Uchitel.
Yeah, I know this wasn't, you weren't trying to ask a leading question, but it did lead me to wonder if this is time sensitive or if it would be appropriate to let the ARPA committee have a vote on this.
So, I don't know, Tara, do you want to respond to that?
It is time sensitive. The hope is that the support, if it does pass this committee and it would be supported, that perhaps it would be helpful in allowing the ARPA to come to a decision. We are hoping to have a fall launch, which would mean that we have to start to prepare in the summer.
Legislator Lopez?
Sure. Thank you. My wife, she's a special ed teacher in the Monticello School District, so she deals with this every day. She sees it every day firsthand. And most of what's really frustrating for her is what you're trying to address here is that bridge that gap between the school and the home. What also further frustrates her is that, you know, she has these parent-teacher conferences where the parents don't show up. They're not there. They're not interested, in what's going on in their children's education. And, my question is, how do you address the situations where the parents are unwilling to participate or unwilling to take that step or participate in this type of program?
So I believe that it would start with offering the opportunities to support not just the youth, but the parent as well. So what is the cause of them not being able to, and I phrase it, I'm sorry, what is the cause of them not participating? Is it because they're not able to, because they weren't aware that the parent-teacher conference was coming up, because they don't have transportation, because they don't understand what their absence means for their young person's success? It would be that case manager or social worker meeting with the school and saying, oh, I see that you refer Johnny to me. One of the questions or the issues is that Johnny's parents do not appear to be engaged. That's the first part of their work, is to be able to explain this to Johnny's parents and then try and figure out what are the challenges or barriers. that is keeping them there. It could be that Johnny has several siblings that are in different stages of education. They've got to be able to split up their time. And perhaps Johnny, as a middle schooler, has had me going to their school as an elementary student, and I'm paying more attention now to my younger children. It could be a number of things, but it is this staff person's responsibility and job to say, this is our reality. How do I help you to get to Johnny's school? Because he's missing you there. And that's that bridge.
Sure. Thank you.
Other questions? I have Legislator Nolan and Legislator Erner.
Thank you very much. I think my internet bounced me out for a minute, so I assume we've had the motion and second to be in discussion at this point.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I heard the initial presentation of this proposal at the ARPA committee earlier this month and was very, very impressed with it. I think that it sets up teams that can go investigate, evaluate some of the questions that were just being discussed about what the barriers are to accessing the system. I think it responds to the increased stress on students and families from the pandemic, which is one of the specified uses for the ARPA funding. And I think it will serve as a pilot for us to know whether we need this type of program in an ongoing fashion. It may very well be that this program would be something that we would want long-term. During my prior term as a legislator, we had people from the school board asking us to help plug this gap between what was happening at home and what was happening at school, and to provide a greater network for support around social determinants of health, which are the underpinning for the child's school success. Do we need the program in the form that it is presented here or some other form? I think we'll learn that by funding this program with ARPA money, with money from the opioid settlements, and really have this funded from outside the county initially with the idea that we might eventually either build it into the county or perhaps into the school system and into those respective budgets. And we might have a better idea of which of those budgets would make most sense given how the services are used and how the program functions best. So I think we're presented here with a fantastic opportunity to provide services while we learn better how to provide services, and do it with monies that are coming in as added monies to our existing budget lines. So I don't have a question other than, you know, how do we go ahead and move forward? One question that did come up, I think, from Chair Walter at the ARPA committee was about the RFP going out before funding was secured. I support that because I think if we have that process moving along and we're ready to go, then we find the funding for it. And so I endorse that course of events having taken place.
Legislator Erner?
Thank you. I would support moving ahead on this tonight. And I noticed we got an update with the ARPA score sheet here, and it seems like the concerns are mainly about some of what Legislator Nolan was just talking about that could be addressed in when it goes back to the ARPA committee or Ways and Means as well. So I'd be a yes if we vote to move ahead.
Others? All right. I'm completely supportive of this program in every way that it was articulated in this PowerPoint, in every single way, except for one element. And that was the RFP to a third party and the fact that it was given to a lowest bidder of a third party organization that's not in Ulster County. So I'm gonna just say my concerns here. First of all, this is a major, major endeavor. It's important. It's hard work. These social workers will, it is a very, I've done a lot of work with social workers in my life, and it is a very, very challenging job that this is, and worth every penny that we can put behind it. A third-party organization that's outside Ulster does not have a history of experience in our schools, with our departments, with our social services. And so that's one concern I have with having this be a third-party organization outside of Ulster County. While if this was internal and done by us in Ulster County, then it would be people like Thomasine, who does know our schools and does know our organizations and does know our other departments, so that that coordination of work and effort is actually feasible. The second part is supervision. Social workers have to be supervised by someone. So this is going to be supervision by someone outside of Ulster County, which means that if there's a problem or a challenge that's happening, we are only going to find out about it later, because it won't be one of our people who on a regular weekly basis check in with these social workers necessarily, as a social worker supervisor should, and identify that, you know, social workers usually log their work, they talk about what's working and what's not. And that high level of supervision that's required, I'm very concerned about it happening outside and away from us. I understand that Thomasine could also serve in some supervisory role, but it is not the same as being the lead supervisor. Also, it's important for these social workers that they have a licensed clinical social worker if they're supervised, because many of them are new in the social work field and they are looking for their licensure. So they need to have a supervisor that has that. The third is we talked about that schools have different levels of services that are similar right now. Some of them have psychiatrists, some of them have social workers. So we really need to understand, for this to be successful, exactly how this integrates with them. Because if the same clinician is seeing someone with the kids in their home, and then there's another clinician working with the kid at the school, how does that integrate? How do they work together? And that model has to be really, really succinctly put out, especially because they're getting paid at very different levels. Because these social workers are being paid by a nonprofit organization as opposed to our in-school social workers. And so I want to implement this when we know how that integration is exactly going to work in these different schools. The next is sustainability. If I was to think of what I want this to look like in 5 years, it is not to be continuously paying a third party company to deliver this care. We lost our mental health services by giving it off to third party companies and taking it away from us. And we've regretted it ever since as a legislature and as a county. And so if the long run is not to be continuously paying some third party company outside of Ulster County to do this, then why not start with a pilot and model here, where we're paying the people, we're hiring the people, and we're doing it here. We could pilot it in a different way by making it smaller. There's the presentation said, some schools have these services a little bit more than others or have more of a support system. But if we're talking sustainability and piloting it, this isn't a model that I would want to see in the long run. I'm almost done. 5, right now we have a crisis in hiring social workers. There are no social workers to hire. Many social workers have quit and moved on to other things because of the overwhelmingness and stress that probably occurred with COVID. They're especially leaving nonprofits because the pay is not as good. In fact, I talked to a couple of social workers in Ulster County who have left their nonprofits and wish they had a county job. Which brings me to the idea that this is not the kind of thing I want to give to the lowest bidder. This is the kind of thing that is absolutely something we get behind in terms of money and resources. So I want a model that has county committee commitment, continuity, our own supervision, allows job growth, that integrates with the colleges and the schools of social work. It strengthens the relationships with the schools. If we mess up in a partnership with the schools, it's very hard to recover from that. And I've been in those situations where if schools are not happy with how things are, it is very hard to remedy that. We need to do it exactly right with them from the very beginning. I want to pay the social workers the way they need to be paid, because this is grueling work. This is very, very difficult work. So I would like to postpone I understand that September was the goal, but I've been having these conversations back and forth with the Deputy Executive Contreras now for months and months and months and months. So it's not like I'm just choosing to postpone this in the last minute, but I want this model. I want us to be doing it. I want us to be leading it. I want us to be paying the social workers what they need to be paid. I'm fine taking ARPA money and opioid money to start this, but it's giving the money to us, not to a third party organization who doesn't have its roots here. And knowing that we are going to have a very hard time, they're going to have a hard time finding social workers as it is. Like the September goal of having 10 social workers is probably pretty unlikely anyway. And so what I'm proposing, and I have put this out there to Deputy Executive Contreras, I've talked to Tara too, for months now, is that we do this 100%, but we do it internally. We get our mental health department. We all voted to have the separate mental health department so that we can be really doing these services and be on top of these services and not hand it off to someone else who may or may not do a great job. And so I would like to postpone this. I would like to have a model where we're delivering it. And again, fine using the ARPA money, fine using the opioid money, but we're delivering it. And then I'd like to see it in our budget. And so that this has got sustainability, that because I do not want to go into the schools and deliver this for a year and then pull it out. That would be terrible. So I want this to be a sustainable part. And I feel, and I imagine you all support me, that this is something that the legislature will absolutely be behind, even if it's a little more expensive to do it internally. All right, Legislator Nolan.
Thank you. And I understand those concerns. However, the legislature did not come up with this program a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago that would have it in place, meeting the needs that are actually there right now. And to switch it to the approach that you're proposing would set it back a year at least, because as you said, it's going to be hard to do it the way it is. In addition, I think some of the points that you make argue for doing the pilot as a pilot from outside the county. But one of the factors being that the program will be judged and it will be refined. But if it comes from us and it doesn't work well, then where do we go from that? It can be much harder once you build something into the structure of a large municipality, the county and the school districts in this case. So I think that if we had started this program and moving towards it quite a bit of time ago, the approach you're talking about, you could sell me, but it wouldn't necessarily be like this is very obviously better for the first year of the program, that we can't do 10. I mean, I wouldn't recommend doing 10 new salaried positions within the county. So do we undershoot what the program actually needs? If we find out we need 10 people to run a program like this, then I think we can decide whether we, you know, how we get that into the budget. But just on kind of a hunch or a guess as to how much we need and which district needs what, I like the flexibility that comes from an independently funded, independently run program. It's like getting a consultant in to do an assessment of the system needs. I think those needs are very great, and I'm really uncomfortable with waiting another year, which I think is a realistic estimate of how much trying to switch to this approach would be. And the fact that there's been conversation about it might be better to do that way doesn't mean that it's better to do it that way. Just means that there's room for difference of opinion on this. And I would hope we'd go ahead and have a vote on this rather than have, just difference of opinion kind of mean that we don't move forward. If there's difference of opinion but enough support to try it, then I certainly would want to go that way.
I'll go to Deputy Executive Contreras and Legislator. You should tell. I just want to clarify, it is not going to take a year. There's not changing the model. It's just changing who's doing the hiring. So it's it's a misnomer to suggest that it would put this off a year to make this internal. Deputy Executive Contreras.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I actually do think that it would set it back by a long time because it does take time to develop these programs. And like even this program, we were hoping to get it off the ground in this past September. But just the process, the design process, everything that is involved, it does end up taking time. So I think especially if we were to wait and have it be part of the budget process, I think I would be concerned that we would be pretty far into next year before we had something that we all agreed on. I think the other comment I wanted to make was the outside of Ulster County comment. I did speak with with Commissioner McDonald about all the concerns that you raised. And my understanding is that the nonprofit does have an existing footprint in Ulster County, and I wanted to ping that over to Tara at some point to describe further. And also just to describe how we see this working in the schools with the existing resources that are in the schools. The other piece is about the lowest bidder. I just wanted to make the point that they were the lowest bidder, but that's really not why we chose them. We chose them based on the proposal and what the strength of the proposal and how excited we were to work with them. So it really wasn't based on who was going to pay their positions, social workers, the lowest. And then on the sustainability piece, I agree. I think the reason that we wanted to do it with a nonprofit and a contracted model is to give us the flexibility to refine it, to continue it in a different scope or scale. Instead of deciding to in-house people right now and be kind of locked in to that shape. And I think that's it for now, but I would love to hear Tara speak more about the nonprofit and the schools.
Sure. So the provider that we thought their proposal most aligned with what the goals were is a longstanding provider in the Albany County area, yes, but they also have a small footprint here in that they do aftercare services for individuals that are returning from residential to Ulster County. So if I can speak just a little bit about that, what they do mainly is they're a residential treatment center. They're a residential school for young people that are having specific issues that they're not able to be at home safely. So they have a high degree of both behavioral needs and psychiatric supports, and they're there on that campus getting that treatment until they're able to come back to the community. When they come back to the community, it's the aftercare worker to figure out how do we mimic and support this young person that's used to having 24-hour supervision to home. So that's a huge bridging that they're doing, and this agency has a lot of experience doing that. They also have a co-license, OASAS and OMH clinic to be able to provide both integrated SUD and mental health services. All of their experiences is what we're hoping to be able to infuse into a program like this. So the other piece that I will say about a provider that doesn't have their headquarters or isn't necessarily Ulster County run is that it allows for families to have some choice in terms of services. We have one main child serving provider, and they've done a lot of great work, but it's one provider that's basically doing the majority of the work. If you're a family member that has three kids and two of your kids have been to this provider, maybe you thought that there was some success. Maybe you'd like to try something different. This allows for a family to have choice of who would be giving them some support. So yes, they don't have a very large footprint here, but they are helping some of our highest needs and highest risk individuals remain safe in this community.
Can you just say the name of the organization?
Sure, the LaSalle School.
That's what they're called up in Albany as well?
Yes.
Legislator Uchitel?
Thank you. So I'm typically a pretty big proponent of doing things in-house, particularly in social services, health, mental health. And I look forward to many fights ahead to bring things in-house that might be outsourced right now. That's part of why I submitted legislation to really understand the cost of, you know, and the you know, labor costs for contractors that we work with, so we can really have a good understanding of this. And even despite that, I'm willing to support tonight and, you know, and in this program in general, doing this through a vendor, because it's a pilot. I actually see the argument of, you know, if there's a hiccup with a school district, it could be detrimental. I actually see the vendor providing a certain, you know, that this arrangement providing a certain level of security with that, because we can always bring it in-house down the road. We're going to have to get good at bringing things in-house that exist in the wild already. And I think that we'll look to opportunities to improve. If this program brings us far enough that there are opportunities to improve and we can bring it in-house, then once it's established, I would definitely support that. Considering some of the challenges that we've, some of the friction that we've had in our body around hiring in general, and creating new positions, particularly outside of the budget, which if we want to get something in place for the fall, this has to be done. You know, this isn't going to be a position that we can build into the budget. So there's just no way this can happen in the fall. If we did it in-house, I just don't see how that would be possible. You know, I think this actually is a, you know, the strongest, I actually commend the executive branch for bringing what I think is the strongest program to win our support here. I actually don't know that they would win our support if this was an in-house program for all of us, even though I generally support those. So I'm comfortable moving this forward tonight, even despite the fact that ARPA hasn't moved on it. And I would just say I don't completely agree with the assertion that a vote in the affirmative tonight would lead to a more affirmative vote for ARPA. I think they should follow their process and not be swayed by our vote. You know, I just wanted to make that point as well.
Anyone else? So I'm just going to, again, clarify, this was never a suggestion, my suggestion, that we wait until the budget. I was supportive of using the ARPA money and the opioid money to start it here in-house. I will also reiterate, something goes wrong with this third-party company, it will be very hard for us to have the school's confidence. I'm going to vote no on this, not because I don't completely support the program and the initiative and the effort, but because I don't think this is the right approach. I think we are looking for trouble with this. I think we're going to have regrets. I think moving it in-house afterwards is going to be even harder. We're giving $1 million to this company. Just keep in mind, it's $1 million for them to do this instead of us keeping this $1 million and paying people. And the issues of how people are paid and their salaries that they're going to be paid and our oversight is going to come back and haunt us. So I'm voting no for that reason. And I'm also voting no because, to Legislator Nolan's point, I have been trying to work with Commissioner McDonald and Deputy Executive Contreras for many months on this and on moving it in-house. I'm not just bringing it up now. This has been a concern. These have been a concern, including how they're going to staff it, because we do have a major deficit in social workers. So I can bring it to vote, and I just want to explain my no, because it has absolutely nothing to do with my desire to do the best for our kids. It's actually, my no is because I want to do the absolute best for our kids. So with that, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. And that's for the ARPA part of it. The next is Resolution 291, amending the county budget to use opioid settlement funding to implement the mental health in schools program. All in favor? Or sorry, motion to discuss. I mean, if there's any more discussion. Please. Nolan, second. Corcoran, any discussion on this? All right, all in, oh, sorry, Deputy Contreras, do you want to say something? Deputy Executive Contreras? No, okay. All in favor of Resolution 291?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Resolution 139, setting a public hearing on proposed local law. So unfortunately, Legislator Petit is not here. She has been taking, you know, postponing it. We did get information from the attorney saying that it we're legally not allowed to have it. Plus, it just came out today that they it's kind of interesting. The state has hired two organizations to implement drug take back in all the pharmacies. We're not sure what the timeline is on this. I don't know if Dr. Smith, you know the timeline on it. I did respond earlier to ask if they know the timeline, but it looks, it's kind of interesting that here we go again, hiring third parties to do what the pharmacies probably should just be doing themselves. But that is the progress there. Dr. Smith, do you know when that is supposed to take place? Like start?
Well, you know, this provision had actually passed several years ago. So, I mean, it's taken them years to get to this point.
Right, but the hiring honest, of the two companies that they just did.
I do not know that time frame on that. Sorry.
Checking my email to see if I got a response. So. Okay, so, I mean, I don't know. I think we will take no action on this, if that makes sense, since, again, Laura's not here to postpone it officially, so we'll just take no action. The next, I'm going to recuse myself. So, Deputy Chair Lopez, will you take the next one, please?
Sure. This is. Hang on. I lost it here. 1 second.
Just say it, we're up to 200.
One second, please. Got it. Okay, resolution 200. Setting a public hearing, proposed local law. Number 7, a local law. Amending the code of the County of Ulster in relation to evictions to be held on Tuesday, July 19th. Move for discussion.
Move it.
Second.
Any discussion?
I may. Yep. Yeah, I you know, it pains me to be approaching the anniversary of having introduced this the first time. But I think this is, I'm going to request that the committee take no action on it. You know, there had been some conversation today about, you know, maybe we can move it forward. But, you know, considering the state of recusals, both in this committee, in potentially laws and rules, when we get to the floor, you know, we have a new ethics law that clarifies the interpretation of conflicts of interest, not just for this, but for a variety of, you know, for what I think is a, you know, kind of more in line with the way that it's been interpreted for every other topic, because this topic does seem to have a certain level of scrutiny that other topics don't have. But such as it is, I think that, you know, as the bill's author, I would ask that we take no action on this again.
Okay. We will take no action. So it does not require a vote. We'll move on.
I think we do have a question from Legislator Erner.
Legislator Erner, yeah.
Thank you. I'm incredibly disappointed at how this is turning out. And at the same time, I've been elected to be an optimist and to say we can do things. So we have to do something else if we're not able to do this to keep our communities together, to keep housing stable for tenants, and to prevent displacements of all kinds in our county. So I'm looking forward to us working as a committee along with the working groups that we have to determine exactly what that is that we're willing and able to do. Thank you.
Anybody okay. else? Oh. All right, Chair Walter.
Yes. All right, resolution 209, setting a public hearing on the sale and or transfer of 5 parcels of land owned by Ulster County and the town of Esopus. A motion to discuss.
Move it.
Duchatel, second.
Second.
Peter Corcoran. Dennis, you want to give a little update?
Thank you, Chair Walter. Appreciate that. We have this resolution went in, and we're now looking at some of the issues that have been raised by the legislature, and also looking at redemptions by others, and our look at some of the other properties that are available. So we now have some changes to this resolution in terms of the properties that are involved, as well as the discussion at the last meeting with respect to the need for an RFEI, or request for expressions of interest, or an RFP, no matter how you put it, to be done before a public hearing has been held. And given what we're seeing with respect to the changes of the numbers of properties and the RFEI, our suggestion would be is that rather than postpone this resolution, if the committee is amenable, to actually withdraw it, and when we have a firmer handle on what actual properties we have interests in, as well as what properties are available to us, we'll resubmit with those properties.
Is it in your intention also to, is there a policy that's being created kind of making the decisions which properties to return, which ones to keep, which ones to convert, how they should be converted? Will we be able to have some kind of, is there some kind of policy associated with that you're working on that end?
I know that there's a discussion with respect to some of the issues as it relates to tax foreclosed properties and working with those. There is some good discussions in terms of the criteria that we use to take the properties. Moving that into a formal discussion and a formal resolution from the legislature is something that's being discussed internally, and I know it's being discussed in a number of different venues. So the short answer is yes. There are properties, however, that we have pulled from the auction that are available to us because they haven't been auctioned, that we can move forward on. What we're looking at is essentially some of those properties are actually being redeemed relative to those current owners that hadn't paid their taxes, so they won't be available if they're redeemed. In addition, one of the properties that we had pulled, the county is looking at for its own purposes, particularly for a respite house.
Good. You just said that just to make me happy, didn't you?
No, actually, I don't. And as you know, we've also reached out to you and others with respect to a potential respite house in Allenville as well.
Yes, actually, on that, I mean, at one point we were going to go tour a couple of those, but it had to get changed. But I will put out to the rest of the committee, hopefully, Deputy Executive Contreras, we couldn't reschedule. Looking at some of those areas, and we could see if other members are interested in looking at them.
And we're working with the current owner to find an appropriate time to visit the house.
Okay, so then we're going to, is this a motion to withdraw this resolution number 209? Can someone make that motion? That's on the request of the planning board.
Yeah, on the request of the planning director, I'll make that motion.
Okay, second?
I'll second that.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay. The next we have is resolution 292, confirming the appointment of Eric Stutt as medical examiner. Motion to discuss?
I'll make that motion.
Second? Legislator Uchitel. Dr. Stutt, I believe you're here with us.
I am.
Would you be willing to introduce yourself to us?
Sure. I'm Eric Stutt. I've graduated medical school back in 1972. I've practiced as a physician ever since. Initially, my training was in family practice, and then I evolved into doing emergency medicine. I came to Ulster County in 1982 and began practicing emergency medicine in Dutchess County initially, then became director of the emergency department at Benedictine Hospital, subsequently associate director of the emergency department at Kingston Hospital and medical director of the emergency department at Margaretville Hospital, just out in Delaware County. maintained my interest in that, but have given up the practice of emergency medicine. I was actually trained in family practice, but found that emergency medicine suited my needs better and gave me an interesting career. I've been doing medical examiner type of work since 1985 as an emergency physician in Putnam County, where the county coroner, who required a physician to represent the medical aspects of the coroner's office, required to have a physician on staff. And so I became coroner's physician from 1985 to 2015, and then joined, interviewed for this position in, not in this position, but actually in as a medical examiner, one of the deputy medical examiners. In 2016, I met with Dr. Smith, was appointed for 2017 tenure. And in this past, in January, I was appointed chief medical examiner.
Great. Anyone have any questions for Dr. Studd? All right, seeing none, all in favor of resolution 292?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Unanimous? Okay.
Thank you.
Welcome, Dr. Studd.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
And thank you for your service.
Resolution number 299, authorizing the commissioner of the Ulster County Department of Mental Health to enter into an intermunicipal agreement with New York State Office of Mental Health to accept funding from the Community Mental Health Services for Adult COVID Relief Block Grant. A motion to discuss.
Second.
I think it was, you should tell second, Nolan. Any discussion? Legislator Ushita?
Yeah, I had a question about this. Just reading through the resolution, there was a mention of workforce development, and or it was workforce recruitment and retention. But it was the rest of it was regarding mental health, and I was wondering. I just wanted to understand that better. Specifically the workforce recruitment and retention component of it.
Would this be Commissioner McDonald? Yeah. Go ahead.
Sure, thank you. I'm sorry. I never know when I can speak and I don't want to speak.
I appreciate that.
So these particular dollars were really the function of our pass-through designation, because the Office of Mental Health received these federal dollars, made the decision about which programs these monies can go to and what specific activities would meet eligibility criteria to use them. So we received information that said, we're going to be putting this money in your state aid letter. There are three different agencies that have the ability to apply for them, or not apply, three different agencies that have the ability to receive this funding because they operate the particular programs. The county has the ability to make the decision about how much each agency gets, but that's it. We don't have any discretion in terms of what are some of the activities that they can use it for. I can say that it's, you know, part of it is training and career development so that folks can be retained because they know that there is a career path for them in particular agency. And one of them is the residential realm. They really struggle with that 24-hour a day staffing. And so they want to be able to retain these staff by saying, if you come on board, we'll be able to get you trained and get you education so that it can further your career ladder. But we didn't have any ability to weigh in on this at all. We received pass-through dollars and we passed them on.
So if I may, Chair Walter, so would it be fair to say that in this type of program with these types of services, you have to always be, in addition to investing in the program, you have to be investing in recruiting and retention of the staff in the program?
Yes.
Great. Well, I definitely appreciate that. As Thomasine will attest, I'm a huge proponent of workforce development, so I was delighted to see that included in this program.
All right, any other questions? All right, all in favor, and I've completely lost track of where I am, of resolution 299?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, I believe it's unanimous. Next, we have resolution 300, amending the 2022 Ulster County budget to accept additional allocation of adult protective services from New York State Office of Children and Family Services. Motion to discuss. Corcoran, second, you should tell. Any questions or discussions on this? All right, all in favor of resolution 300?
Aye.
All right. Unanimous. Resolution 301, amending the 2022 Ulster County budget to accept allocations of funds from New York State Office of Temporary Disability Assistance to support activities associated with sheltering the homeless during inclement weather, cold blue plan. A motion to discuss. Nolan, second. Second. Erner, any discussion? Legislator Erner. Oh, you're muted, sorry.
Thank you. So it looks like we're the Catholic Charities and family who do this together at the Warming Center might be paying $18 an hour to some folks at the day and night shift. And as folks know, I'd hoped to raise our contractor wage. I believe it would have covered this sort of service up to 20. And I still think they should be paying more. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or concerns related to this one? All in favor of Resolution 301?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. It's unanimous. Next, we have Resolution 302, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Office of Children and Family Services for a multidisciplinary team child advocacy center. Motion to discuss. Nolan, second. You should tell. Any discussion on 302? No? All in favor of 302?
Aye.
All right. Unanimous. 303. Authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a contract with the New York State Department of Health to continue the rabies program, Department of Health. Nolan? Second, you should tell. Any questions?
Just again, we'll offer to tell my story of treating rabies from San Francisco in Nepal from a snow lion bite. For anybody who wants to hear it, anytime, any place.
Okay, not this time or place, but another time or place. Legislator Erner. Oh, you're muted again.
Oops, that space bar thing. Thank you. Can someone explain? I see it was $30,000 for this year, $40,000 for each of the next 2 years, and then just $10,000. I guess that's an average of $30,000 per year. But what's the? I wasn't able to understand that. If anybody can explain that.
So that would be Dr. Smith.
Yeah, the New York State Department of Health provides local health departments basically a type of grant money in order to execute our responsibility to control rabies in the county. You know, we do have to respond to any calls regarding bites from wild animals, et cetera. If we deem during that conversation with the emergency room that the person does indeed fit the criteria for needing not only the wound treatment that they get through the hospital, but the rabies prophylaxis, utilizing a shot of immune globulin, a shot of the rabies vaccine, to be subsequently followed up by several doses of the vaccine as per the schedule for vaccine delivery. Then we say to the state, we have, you know, X numbers of cases. It cost us so much and it's seeking reimbursement from that grant. And what the state does is, looking forward, they decide how much we have in the past, say, utilized of this rabies grant money, and then authorize us to submit for reimbursement for the upcoming years. It's critical. I mean, it supports our work dealing with rabies, potential rabies cases, and basically making sure that the people in our community who encounter wild animals and so are bitten by bats or rats or foxes or wild dogs or cats, that they would be able to receive this treatment, which is really expensive treatment, and to deliver that through that grant program. So that's it in a nutshell.
I'm just saying, Erna, did that answer? Go ahead, Legislator Erna.
I guess I would thank you for that, Dr. Smith. And I was just do we expect in 2025 we might be able to get more than the $10,000 because we're getting $30,000 this year and $40,000 the next 2 years?
Well, we can advocate for sure, you know, but again, it is a little bit hard to project out that far how much we'll actually need, but potentially we can certainly look for that should our need for that money exceed that amount, or the reimbursement exceed that amount. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right. All in favor of Resolution 303?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, unanimous. Next, we have Resolution 304, amending the Ulster County budget to reflect additional funding for Brighter Futures Initiative Full-Time Assistant Youth Bureau. Motion to discuss.
I'll move it.
Nolan, second. Uchitel. Legislator Erner, do you have questions? Go ahead. Oh, you're muted again.
Sorry. I believe there's just a typo on the last line. For the additional revenue dollars, I believe it should say 2022 and not 20,232. That's all.
That was brought up in the chair's meeting and has been corrected. There should be an updated version in the online packet, and that's what it'll say moving forward.
Thank you very much.
Other? So, I know I spoke to you, Deputy Executive Contreras, although now I'm sort of understanding it a little bit differently. So I'll ask a question a little bit differently. Because I recognize that the position is funded us, funding this person in the Youth Bureau. And maybe this is to you, Nina. But it supports a program that's funded outside by grants.
Correct.
If the grant program stopped, would it be your expectation to continue this person at the Youth Bureau, or would this person is this person's role only tied into the grant?
The last part you said, I'm sorry.
It was the opposite. So is this person's role only tied into the grant, or is it your expectation that if for some reason, and the reason why I ask is when we do have a position that's grant related, we typically have a caveat that says if the funding was to run out or stop, the position would be terminated. However, since we're paying for this position, not the grant, I'm just wondering if your expectation is if for some reason the program went away and wasn't funded by this outside source, would we keep this individual at this level continuing?
It would be my hope, sincerely, that we would continue to have this position, because this program is probably one of the best programs I've been involved in. We are actually looking into other grants, and that's one thing. I don't know what was discussed prior to. Joanna, do you want to say something? I don't want to speak to. So, okay. So I've done a lot of things in the city of Kingston and beyond, and this program is amazing. It's really, it delves into, there's a dual capacity format that I actually follow, where I'm dealing with the educational system, the student, but we delve really deep into the family engagement piece. And that is the magic of this component. And I don't see it anywhere else. I mean, people say they do it, but we do it. I do it. And I'm very, very deeply involved myself, because I know that that's where a lot of the problems and the issues resonate. You know, there's a gap between the school, the educational system, whether it's BOCES or the high school, and the home component. And we're bridging that gap more than I've ever seen. It's amazing. There have been tons of parents that they say, she's never going to come. That kid isn't going to make it. And they make it. Last year, the principal, DeSico of Kingston High School, asked me, Nina, can I actually bring this student on the stage? Because literally she waited until the last month. Like, she had been a problem all through high school. Her family, there was a lot of home component issues, you know, they were challenging even for me. And you put me in a box with a pit bull and I'll make it work. But this was a really, really tough family, and I didn't give up. I mean, they called me 5 a.m. sometimes screaming, but I didn't give up. So, and the mentors component is they go into homes where most often people don't want to go. So
thank you. So just again, Deputy Executive executive controllers. It's a question of whether we need to have an amendment or not, because if the position is would stay, we don't need the amendment. So go ahead.
I think how we had talked about it, we would be fine with that amendment because it's not saying that the person would necessarily go away, just the specific position tied to the Brighter Futures Initiative, which again, for the record, we very much support continuing. But if it doesn't, for whatever reason, it's we would be comfortable with saying that that specific position.
Right. I guess my change was seeing that it's not titled, the title is not, does not have the name of the program. The title is just Assistant Youth Bureau Coordinator. And so if that's the title and that this program stopped, but this person would stay Assistant Youth Bureau Coordinator, then there's no need for the caveat, if that makes sense. So like they're not called, you know, the Code Blue Coordinator, and then if Code Blue stopped, it wouldn't, they're just a youth bureau, not just, but you know, they are youth bureau coordinator. So
I don't know that that was intentional.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
that's what I didn't notice when we were talking.
Yeah, Director Dawson, you could correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know that that
Because, and you know, I'm always honest. That's one of my downfalls. When this was such a new program, but it was such a program that is very relatable to me and what I've done. When it came to that title, we actually were dealing with the county and what the concept, what we could actually title this person. So I actually dealt with personnel and let them do whatever. And when they came up with the title, I was like, great. I don't care what you call it, to be honest. So just as long as I can have this person in position or these people in position to help different segments of the county, we're actually doing it in much more than Kingston. So
okay.
So Eve, to answer your question, it was listed as Assistant Youth Bureau Coordinator because it made sense because it fell under Youth Bureau. So that's kind of why there wasn't a specific plan to not name it Brighter Futures Coordinator.
Got it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Legislator Nolan?
Yes, I think this is a happy occurrence in light of our prior discussion about programs being in-house in the county. And if we did have difficulty with obtaining Brighter Futures funding for whatever reason, that program having difficulties itself, or we didn't qualify or something, I think we would need to have somebody working as an assistant youth bureau coordinator to find alternative funding, to provide some support for the youth that were in the program. So I you know, it's a position that I think we can benefit from having, even if we don't have the outside funding. So I'm fine with it the way it is. If there are legislators who are troubled by our funding a $51,000 position, you know, from the county, then I would support the amendment as well. But I think we need the staffing for these youth, and this puts it there and puts it there in a stable way.
Agreed. So I guess I'll leave it to you, Deputy Executive Contreras. To Legislator Nolan's point, I know I'm personally comfortable and would be perfectly happy with this person staying on no matter what the program is they're implementing, but you also have to think about whether you feel like that threatens us at all. So I would allow you to make the decision on whether you would like to add that caveat, that amendment, and one of us can make the amendment here, or whether you will, we could proceed and just under the expectation that this position is we're establishing this position.
Right. So my understanding is the position would go away if the grant funding, the amendment means that the position would go away if the grant funding expired, but not the person necessarily.
Right.
So I'm fine with that because I don't want to have any risk of this not being funded.
Okay. So we had a specific sentence, Jay. Do you have it handy that it's just one sentence that adds on that says, should the grant funding no longer be available for this position, the position will?
Well, you all have kind of transitioned from that more hardline language to should funding for the position be discontinued, the Ways and Means Committee in conjunction with the department head overseeing the program would reevaluate.
We made it that long? Okay.
Well, I'm paraphrasing, but you did.
Does somebody want to make?
I make that motion.
And Jay, you're writing the motion, so it's whatever you just said it was.
I'll make it the standard language that you use when funding tied to a position or a grant is discontinued.
All right, all in favor of the amendment?
Oh, first, we need
a second on the amendment. Sorry, second on the amendment.
Second.
You should tell. All in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
All right. Yeah. All in favor of the resolution as amended?
Aye.
Okay. Aye. That was easy. All right. Next, we have resolution 305, approving the contract of 111,435 entered in the county for Family of Woodstock for Youth Bureau. Actually, well, yeah. Okay. Motion to discuss. Corcoran, second. Your Erner, any discussion? So the only question I had was just clarification, because the timeline, what happens is somehow it seems like we're approving these for work that has already occurred in the past a little and somewhat in the future. I guess I get that the state is slow and the process is slow. I just wonder what will you do if 1 year you've started it for 6 months and then you don't get the funding?
Well, you know, I'm actually a member of the Hudson Valley Youth Bureau Association, and this must come up every year, especially with COVID. We were paranoid, like, because the state cut us. They were like, okay, we don't know what's going to happen to the world. We have to cut things. So we actually were cut severely, only for them to find that money and put it back. But it happened at the end of the year. So we were like trying to figure out how to make things work, because for years this process has happened like this, because the state loves funding youth programs. It's a necessity. And that's one of the things I'm grateful for, seriously grateful for. But I'm uncomfortable with the way that when I started here, I said, wait, what do you mean? Like they're going to run the program from January to December, and we don't even get our first allotment amount until like June, July sometimes. And the second allotment, which adds to the first allotment, happens in last year. It was ridiculously late, like November, December. So for years before I even came here, it was an understanding that these programs were running, knowing that pretty much they were going to pay their people with the funds that they had previously, and then they would get reimbursed, I guess. I don't know. But it is uncomfortable, but it's actually always worked out to the benefit, because the state always comes up with more. I've had to do amendments because they come up with more money. So I haven't seen it where it's been an issue. It's very challenging, because the state also wants us to get new outside the box programs. And how do we explain that to somebody that hasn't experienced that? So it's worked positively, actually more beneficial. It's just a backward system.
Well, I assume because the executive's office puts this through, that should anything ever go wrong, they are standing behind it and will support, we can't unpay people who've been paid. So great. So we'll look forward to wondering about this every single time. all in favor of Resolution 305?
Aye.
Okay, unanimous. Resolution 306. Another contract for $69,557, also for Family Woodstock with Youth Bureau. Motion to discuss.
Move it.
You should tell. Second, Corcoran. Any discussion? All in favor of Resolution 306?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
So much.
So moved. So we have some old business and new business. So before we get to the new business, the working groups, the housing working groups, I had the pleasure of sitting through on all three of them. I'm really excited about how they're going. I think they're terrific. I think a lot of really good ideas are out there. I'm offering a couple of thoughts and suggestions that you can ignore if you want. One is, I noticed in a couple of them, the offer was made for other people to chair, but then no one really jumped in, and then the conversation moved aside. My sense is, especially after you've had your first meeting, some people have risen up as being very active in the group, that if you are actually interested in someone else possibly chairing it, I would encourage you to reach out to them separately and ask them, and then bring it up at the meeting, because it's very intimidating, I think, for someone to be like, yeah, I'll do it. So again, I noticed like Marissa McClinton was very vocal. You know, there's several people who might be very willing to do this. So again, if that is something that's of interest, if you don't want to continue being the chair, and it's, you know, no judgment, if you feel you'd like to offer it, I encourage you to talk to them privately. And then if they say they are, then you could make the motion, and it's probably going to vote in favor. So that was one little thing. The other one is, as Legislator Nolan pointed out, we don't have legislative support to take minutes. You all kind of do your notes on the way that you do it. But another benefit of, if you identify someone else to be the chair, is you might be able to take notes a little easier, or feel free to ask at each meeting if somebody wants to take notes and send them to you. So that might be a solution, as if you just identify somebody to do that. And unfortunately, that was mostly for Legislator Nolan, who's now frozen, I think. Are you back with us, Legislator Nolan? Okay. So, and then the last piece of just suggestion, if you could take or leave as you might wish, is, so Legislator Nolan, are you here? Is a few ideas were thrown out as maybe we should and maybe we could. What I would encourage you to do is, when someone throws out an idea and says maybe we could, to turn it right back on them and say, that sounds like a great idea. Can you look into that and report back to us on the next meeting? Because what ends up happening is the ideas, they might go down on paper, but like nothing happens and progresses with the idea by the next meeting. And I myself said too, maybe we should, and probably someone should have said to me, okay, so Eve, go do the homework and get back to us on it next meeting. So, you know, just so that things can progress along, I encourage you, if someone has a good idea, totally ask them, to encourage them to go and find out more information and report back at the next group, so that you actually move along with that. So that's just a thought, especially because I wasn't leading it. I got to just listen. So I got to sort of get the sense of some of those things. Any other feedback, comments from any of you about those groups, Legislator Ushita?
I'll just say, I mean, I think I'm very encouraged by the starting point, and I'll just say, as is often the case, you know, we would really benefit from more representation from folks in Southern Ulster County. So I say that to my colleagues who represent those communities, or perhaps in, you know, the minority caucus, who might have colleagues that represent those communities, that you can put the word out to have, you know, folks come, you know, because I definitely want us to represent all areas of the county, because that's everyone that we're legislating on behalf of. So, you know, I appreciate if anyone has folks that might benefit from, or that we might benefit from their attendance, you know, please send them our way. We would love to have them.
And there were a few different kinds of population groups brought up in one, including individuals who might be homeless or mental health or families, single parents, you know, really identifying if there's some group that really, some individuals that represent an area that and can speak for that aren't in the room. So I don't know, Nina, if you are connected with this, but I imagine you would know some good families that or individuals who might be very useful to contribute, you know, ideas of how we can do better.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I actually have one of my MBK mentors is a retired teacher, and she dives deep into homeless families. She might even be great for it, because she's just compassionate about it. Like, She introduced me last week to two girls that have been in a homeless shelter for years.
Wow. So if you just get that information to Jay, Jay can send out an invitation, or Lori, I don't know who'll be doing it now.
Sorry, Jay,
is it you or Lori who will send out the reminders of the next meeting?
We'll flip a coin, okay. So you can send it to me.
Get it to Jay for now, and Jay can invite. And anyone else who has ideas of people can send them over to Jay for now. Any other comments on this? Okay. So the next thing is I've asked Commissioner McDonald, and I will be asking the other department heads, so stay tuned for yours. Really wanted, well before budget time, to have a sense of, where do you see your department going? What kinds of changes do you see? What kinds of advancements or expansions, maybe some reductions, but just so that we hear from you before we see those budget numbers, where your vision lay. And this is very helpful for us because, you know, sometimes the vision doesn't get realized by the time it gets onto paper, but we can also advocate for that vision if we are supportive of it. And so, Commissioner McDonald, I will give it the floor back to you again.
Okay, thank you. I got the sign from Jay so I can share my screen. And I know what I'm doing this time. Okay, so thank you, Chair Walter. It's very helpful that you gave it the frame because we're new to the budget season pieces, so right now what we have are ideas in terms of vision for what we'd like to be able to accomplish. So we're not really sure quite yet what we will be asking for, and the budget process will definitely take on its own shape, but this is sort of what we're thinking about. In terms of the vision for the department, we still are very much steeped in our responsibilities as the local governmental unit and our designation as the LGU. It takes up a lot of our time, and it is very important in that LGU function represents the management of the $9 million worth of state aid that is passed through us. But what we're hoping to be able to do is to see if we can balance out our functioning as the LGU and push us towards more community direct sort of service work. And how that's going to look is not necessarily in the traditional like clinic service work, but even our system as it in itself is pushing towards having things, services be in the community where folks are. And we definitely want to see ourselves as a part of that transition. How that'll look, there's still a lot of discussion for that to be had, but we're really hoping to move in that direction. Based on the support that we've gotten from the legislature and from the county exec's office and having some additional resources within the department, we're already moving towards that direction. So contract management is always a fundamental responsibility of ours, and that's around managing those pass-through funds. Then we have some other legal mandates that are unfunded, but still legal mandates around the assisted outpatient treatment, court evaluation, 730s, 390s, all of the numbers. We're responsible for that, and we're still keeping on top of that. Single point of access is, again, a huge part of what it is that we do, but it was always our linkage into the community. SPOA, we have the residential, the adult case management, and the children's SPOA. Folks come to us via application or telephone call looking for linkages to services, and that's what we do. We're on the phone all day with residents themselves, with parents, with advocates for residents, wanting to make sure that they're supported in some way. But that SPOA also is our bridge into things that are more community-oriented. So this month, we were able to bring on a court liaison who will also be shared staff with the sheriff's office in doing the AVERT program, which is that community violence program that's helping, hopefully, going to help to reduce violence in our communities. And the court liaison, she's been on board for maybe 2 or 3 weeks now and has spent the majority of her time in the community going to court, different court, and having conversations with the judges to be able to sell what it is that we can do in terms of support for not just the judges, but for the folks that come before them. So we're already putting our feet into those waters. And then there are some other services that I'll get into a little bit later so that this can make a little bit more sense in terms of CORE and other community-based clinical activities. So the staff that the legislature approved and our county executive asked for, we are really moving forward. There was a little bit of time where we were a little concerned with regards to our recruitment process, but things have definitely picked up. I was officially appointed as the full-time commissioner. Then in addition, there are the four new positions, financial analysts. We were able to promote a longtime 18-year tenured accountant, Lucinda Kaiser, who has agreed to take on our lead fiscal role. And Lucinda, as accountant, was responsible for our state aid and all of the management of the state aid functioning. So with that being that $9 million that we are build everything on, she already came in with having so much mastery over what keeps us running. So that was a coup in getting Lucinda to be promoted for this position. Our evaluative analyst started on Monday, has already taken on doing some revisions of our database, and will be really the person that we look to garner that data that helps us to inform even more change. So that's very exciting. The court liaison I spoke about, and the special projects director, we are recruiting and pulling together all of those personnel functions that need us to be able to get someone into the seats. But we are definitely moving forward. Before switching to the slide, though, I also did want to introduce Katrina Williams and me going on to the commissioner position. We appointed Katrina as our deputy commissioner, and she was very helpful in bringing these slides together. And you'll see Katrina, who may have to stand in my stead when I'm not available. So thank you, Katrina, as well. Okay, so in making the decision to separate out the departments, our county executive impaneled the Behavioral Health Task Force and looked to the task force, which was a cohort of community stakeholders with content expertise around substance use disorder and mental health service provision in our community. The task force met for about 4 months and came up with a 5-year plan and recommendations of areas that needed some expansion or assistance, or definitely to have some areas of focus. These were the recommendations from the task force, and the highlighted pieces are pieces that we've made significant progress on. And that's more than half, which makes me just really excited and happy. I will be able to talk a little bit more about to each one of them, but the ones that are not highlighted requires more community collaboration in terms of community-based organizations and their willingness to be able to offer some of these programs. So we're working on those, but the workforce rate increases was something that the state put into their budget, and we're helping through our pass-through functions to get out to our programs. We, in having the regular provider conversations that we have with different sets of providers, we are hearing anecdotally that some of the limitations and some of the challenges around recruitment are appearing to ease. So that's also very helpful. The expand to access to in methadone is how that should read. And Lexington Center, which is a longstanding substance use disorder provider throughout the Hudson Valley, was recently awarded a SAMHSA grant to be able to do some satellite methadone work and have agreed to be able to do a satellite here in Ulster County. There are many, many steps between the award for the dollars and actually getting the service implemented, but at least we have funding, and that's a great place to start. So we'll hopefully be able to open up some access on methadone. The inpatient psychiatric treatment, I'll talk about a little bit later, but just I'm going to preface it by saying that there's some good news there. The crisis services, we put out the RFP for the Crisis Stabilization Center, and I'll give a little bit more information on that in a later slide as well. mobile mental health expansion. The hope is to be able to get a third team in the New Pulse area, and we are working with the operator access supports for living in that. Behavioral health urgent care has been up and running a year, I believe, as of this month. And their numbers are increasing in terms of the folks that they, the lives that they're touching and the folks that they're seeing on a daily basis. Supports, social supports, and under the social supports were mental health in schools, respite and supportive transitional housing. Respite we spoke about a little bit earlier, in which we're starting to do some site selection. So hopefully that goes well. Mental health in schools, we had great discussion, so I don't need to touch on that anymore. And supportive transitional housing is, RUPCO has taken the lead on working with the quality in transformation. So we are really making a lot of progress on the task force recommendations. So the new programs and projects. As I mentioned, the Crisis Stabilization Center, the New York State Office of Mental Health and Office of Alcohol Supports, I forget, OASA, sorry, has this RFP that is due tomorrow for Regional 12, I believe, of crisis stabilization centers within the state. There will be at least one in the Mid-Hudson region. The Ulster County Department of Mental Health, in conjunction with our county exec's office, put out an RFP for a local crisis stabilization center. And then we will support the providers for the statewide RFP. The hope is that that statewide RFP gives not just capital funds, but also it gives some operational dollars for the first 2 years before the billing becomes sustainable. So that would be a coup for us. But regardless of whether the provider, if a provider receives the award for the state RFP, we're definitely going to have a crisis stabilization center within our borders. So that's very exciting. The crisis respite, again, spoke about, mental health in schools spoke about, jail reentry care management. There is an RFP that that Ulster County released in terms of getting this care management program up and running. And really the hope is that we're still losing folks as they walk from the jails and come back into our communities. Despite the fact that there is case management in the jail, there's discharge planning in the jail, there are these great plans that happen when they're there, but the plans aren't being executed to its fruition in the community. And then folks have a higher level of recidivism because their needs aren't getting met, or not. Because, but part of the reason is because their needs aren't getting met. So we really need to be able to help and identify what are some of the barriers that are keeping folks to be in the community and not getting caught within the criminal justice system. Some of those barriers, like I said, are identified when they're in jail, but we're not making bridging that gap. And this case management service would be able to do that. So we will be reviewing the RFPs when they come in and hopefully make an award sometime within the summer. The New Pulse expansion I spoke to, and the Children's System of Care grant. I'm wondering, Katrina, since I didn't give you much of anything else to discuss, would you like to talk about the Children of the System of Care grant, since you were one of the spearheads in getting it awarded?
Sure. Yeah. So this was as small as a $25,000 grant that also came through block grant funding through the state. That we were awarded the very end of last year. So the funding will run through 2022. And in our proposal, what we decided that we wanted to do is really use it as an opportunity to not only reinvigorate our child system of care work, that's really an extension of our Integrated Ulster Initiative, but use it specifically as an opportunity to engage youth and families in really ensuring that their voice is what's leading the work. So the way that we did it is we, Thomasine co-chairs our child system of care work with Michelle Hirsch, who is a Kingston alderwoman and also a family care advocate and the director of the program there at Family of Woodstock, so a parent with lived experience. And they have been doing a tremendous amount of work, a lot of it in collaboration with Nina Dawson, who has just been amazing and kind of also supports the youth end of things. And really like being out in the community, engaging families. So a lot of it is collecting information, a bit of needs assessment, and really engaging our residents in conversations about like what the needs are and what they would like to see. So there's a lot of really fun stuff happening that will hopefully accumulate into things like us having a youth advisory board to truly guide the work that we're doing, and having parents and caregivers, you know, leading all of our work in an oversight role to ensure that, you know, the work that we're doing is really including their voice. So really exciting. I'm hoping that System of Care is a longstanding initiative in the Office of Mental Health. So it's something that the county has been more involved with in years past. And we're really hopeful that now that we've got our you know, foot back in the game, that we can, you know, maybe look at larger opportunities to continue to implement that approach.
Thank you, Katrina. Sure. Also, looping back in terms of the System of Care work, it really does necessitate that we do a lot of our work, or at least half of the work, in terms of making sure that the System of Care is successful outside of these walls. And so Thomasine has been spending a good amount of time in the schools, which is exceedingly helpful. And we will see the outcomes of that in increased referrals when she comes back into the office after having some time with direct conversations with students, with teachers. And again, that's the direction that we're hoping to be able to move in. Current needs. So just to give you a snapshot of some of the data that we have with regards to some challenges our residents are experiencing, suicide deaths, and this is all 2021 data. Suicide deaths, we had 24 deaths by suicide in 2021, 74 overdose deaths, 386 overdoses that were reported, 2,992 psychiatric ED visits, and 304 SUD-specific ED visits. And that brings us into the conversation about the status of the Westchester Medical Center beds. My hope is that you're all aware that Health Alliance it will be reducing their original capacity of from 40 to 20, but we will have 20 inpatient beds that are here at the Mary's Avenue campus. The other piece that I really want to be able to emphasize is that it's not just that we'll be getting these beds, that they'll be returning, but they're going to be returning in a state-of-the-art facility, a facility that has the ability to keep folks safe with, you know, safety equipment and beds in single rooms when needed, and the ability for having appropriate space for observation, all of those things that are required. So we're not just getting the old beds back, we're getting better beds. And so that at least is quite exciting. The hope is that when the renovations are done for the psych unit, it'll probably be 2023 before folks will start to come back to that unit for stabilization. So 2023 budget considerations. Like I said, we just have a few things right now because we're really trying to be able to manage what we've got on our plates and being having new staff and having the creativity that all of these staff are coming along with and saying, have we thought about this and maybe moving in that direction, just really garnering all of that expertise and bringing it to bear. But as of right now, we have three things that are on the table. Currently, our financial analyst, currently our fiscal lead is under the title of financial analyst. Her duties, however, are most appropriately aligned with manager of fiscal operations. It's a small adjustment in terms of budgetary concerns, but it is something that we would like to align for the future. And then we'll be looking to add an administrative assistant to act as a receptionist and to assist with some secretarial duties. Right now, we have one administrative specialist that is the support for the department, but that specialist also takes care of contracts and helps to do the scheduling for our 730s and is the person that is responsible for the phones. When the department moves into the 368 building, we'll hopefully have a receptionist area. It's impossible for our current administrative specialist to add the reception duties to her list of duties. Certainly, it'll be all of our duties to make sure that everyone is welcoming and engaged from the time that they walk through the door. But it would be nice to have a specific staff that is what they do most of the time, and we would support them in being able to do that. So those are the two positions that we're looking at. And then to go back to that first slide when we talked about that final piece of the that transition into the community and balance out our LGU time with the community time. And I had CORE there. CORE is stands for Community Oriented Recovery Empowerment Services. And this is these are community level services that are under the Medicaid package. And it's under the Medicaid waiver, and it allows for us, it does focus on Medicaid only, but it does allow for us to be able to provide both supportive and clinical services to residents with Medicaid in the community. This is a transition from home-based community services because HBCS services did not work for us. We had designated agencies that were able to provide the service on paper, but never provided it in reality. CORE, the transition between HCBS and CORE allows for some relaxation in the way that someone can meet criteria and be eligible, how they can be admitted into the program. Things that we knew weren't going wrong and limited access to the previous home-based services and now would hopefully open up to that. Even though it has relaxed some of the regulations, we still only have a limited amount of agencies that have agreed to be designated for Ulster County. And there are some real clinical opportunities that come along with these CORE services. So the question is this a way for the county to be able to provide community-based services, clinical services with a small cohort of staff, maybe a social worker and some psychiatric time, and be able to support some of our higher need, higher risk individuals in the community? Again, it's a question that we have out there, but we're looking to see how are we going to be able to support directly some of our higher need individuals. So we're thinking, we're talking, we're wanting, this is a part of our mission to balance out the LGU, the administrative, and really get us into the community. So that's it. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to give you guys an update on how the Department of Mental Health is going.
Thank you so much, Commissioner McDonald. That was so helpful and useful. And it also gives us a nice perspective so that when we do see the budget, we understand, even of existing programs, like what those numbers and words all relate to, because oftentimes it's sort of a little mystery to us. So I will put Commissioner Iaposian guard that it'd be nice to get this from you next, and you as well, Nina and Dr. Smith, but you're on deck, but maybe if for the next month, if we could get DSS, sort of similar piece of any kinds of enhancements, changes, expectations. I will say, Dr. Smith, I really want to see lead poisoning abatement on your budget when we come in to the next year. But unless anyone, does anyone have any questions for the commissioner, for Commissioner McDonald, before we adjourn? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Legislator Erner.
Thank you. And yes, thank you, Commissioner McDonald, for your presentation. I have had some conversations over the past month, and I'm trying to get a little handle on the history, for example, of how there used to be more clinical services that were provided by the county directly. And I appreciate you kind of wrapping up your presentation, wondering about how that might look going forward. And I've spoken with some veteran mental health care providers who had worked for county, and and I've also spoke with members of the Community Services Board. And can you comment on anything about funding or lack thereof from the state or others with respect to an 1115 waiver, and if there's anything we need to be doing to try and get more funds as we think about pulling more things back in-house, expanding what clinical we can do as we're getting this new facility and so forth? And I apologize, it's a bit of a rambling question.
It's a very good question. And I'm not necessarily sure that it's a matter of more funding. The 1115 waiver provides a lot of opportunities within it. A lot of dollars have been committed under the waiver. but it's not just the funding for the particular service. It's the way in which the billing rates are. And, you know, I'll give you an example. One of the reasons that there were particular issues for the home-based community services was because, well, at least on the children's side, that you can get someone to provide the service, but you're not paying them for travel. Well, that's very difficult, especially when you're talking about, you know, gas being $5 and $6 per gallon. But the rate structure didn't allow for the agencies to include that in their hiring practices. So all of those things need to be able to align. It's not just the money itself, but how it's able to be distributed so that the services can actually work. There are billions of dollars that are out there. And I can say that for Ulster County, despite the fact that there were Medicaid eligible individuals, we still didn't gain the access for it because those fundamental pieces about rate structures and all of that was a challenge. The state is working on it, which is how we ended up with CORE. And I think that CORE will be a better iteration of all of this. But I wouldn't say that it's about advocating for more money, but the way in which the whole structure, the whole house is built.
Other questions for the commissioner? I have one. We had talked a while ago about this idea that across our entire county, we do have licensed therapists, private licensed therapists, and then we have lots of people who need it, and often the two never meet. And typically it's related to reimbursable insurance, and that for many of these one-off therapists, the concept of getting into the system and being able to take Medicare, Medicaid, private insurance, it's very complicated. And so we had talked about this model of not necessarily increasing clinicians at Ulster County, but actually creating a support system for the individual clinicians in helping them. How do you do this? How do you be able to take insurance? Maybe helping them and how you file and how you do it so that it's something more feasible for them to do. Because I've heard from many of them, like, it feels so overwhelming. And so I would love if you could give some thought to what that would look like from your department of some kind of infrastructure, maybe an individual administrator who is particularly there to both serve to support the clinicians all over our county, and then they can also serve as a liaison. So you find out someone has a need in Ellenville because they're adolescent and it's that specific, you'll actually have this sort of army of potential people who don't have to pay out of pocket to go see. And so I would love to see some kind of, if it feels like it fits within your model, some kind of approach like that.
It definitely fits within our model. What we do is at the baseline is to be able to support different parts of our system so that the system is healthy and that there's ongoing and ease of access. So whatever that means is wherever that challenge is how we're meant to support. We started to bring in, and this is pre-pandemic, and the hope is that we can get back to this when we're in a more stable place, which, you know, should be soon. And to bring into our office the therapist. We had done some work, I think it was like 2 or 3 meetings that we planned with therapists that were not necessarily in licensed clinics so that they can know it. And it was twofold. One is that they know that we're here and we are a support. Two is that they understand that when they are dealing with a private patient, there are linkages beyond what they can provide that patient in that hour and a half, and that they can lean into us for that support. We continue to try and have these sort of ongoing communications, and definitely was lapsed around the pandemic when we shut down and there were no meetings, and we only did the meetings that we had already continued and were able to pivot to Zoom or what have you. But it's hard to be able to keep these folks engaged because they're business people that utilize their time to be able to provide the service. So to say come to a meeting for an hour. That's difficult. However, we, all of the staff here, have the ability to act as a resource in terms of how do I help with insurance and all of that stuff. But that is definitely a part of our plan moving forward.
That's great. And if you could find ways of being proactive about it, that would be terrific.
That would be the next iteration.
Nina?
Really quick, that's such an important point that you brought up, Eve. That's, or I'm sorry, Chair Walter. I think we have on staff in the Brighter Futures program an LMFT, and she's a gift to us. I mean, there are so many stigmas with families that we deal with that mental health is like not in the picture at all. So we're actually introducing, and there's been a whole educational process that I had to take families through just to get them to allow one consult with the either their child or with them themselves. And the therapist that I have is an LMFT, and she is amazing, amazing. And after me educating these families that are like, no, Mike, I'm not doing that. When I bargain with them, okay, you do a visit and let your child do one consult and come back to me and tell me what you think. And every one of them has come back and said, oh my God, I love her. And they're still seeing her, but she's very, very expensive, and she is private. So like to bridge that gap with is an amazing, amazing, amazing point you brought up. Thank you for that.
Anyone else? All right, thank you. And I'll just say one last point, and this ties back into the whole school conversation. I think you can feel confident that you have very strong bipartisan support from the legislature to think big. Because as much as you've done so much in such a small amount of time, we have so far to go with mental health that I encourage you, and I know that there was some intimidation about that very project of in hiring a third party, because the fear that the legislature wouldn't get behind doing it internally. And I just want you to know that we are, I think you will find many advocates if you think big. And this is a good time. This is a time where there's some money. You know, we're not in, there have been other years, especially when COVID started, where we were so worried about everything that everyone had to make cuts. And so we could be groundbreakers in this state in how we respond to mental health. And I really hope that you trust that this group of legislators have your back and will really, you know, support the work you do, because it's really, really great and impressive.
Thank you.
All right. And with that, I'll take a motion to adjourn. No one wants to go?
I'll make that motion.
Second. Nolan, on favor.
Aye.
All right. Thank you all. Have a good day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care, everyone.